This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is September 29, 1981. The interview is taking place in Vancouver, Washington, and is being conducted by Donna Maloney. What is your full name?
Esther Irene Sundvik. My maiden name was Priestet.
Could you spell those names, Sundvik and
Sundvik. S-U-N-D-V-I-K.
Okay, and then your maiden name?
F-R-I-S-T-E-D-T. Priestet.
Okay. Well, when and where were you born?
In a place called Utkarvi, Åland Islands.
And
it belonged to Saltvik. Saltvik, but this little place was a little by itself, and it was called Utkarvi.
Okay, and the Åland Islands then are, they belong to Finland, understand, but they speak Swedish there on the
islands.
Is the language mixed at all? Is there any Finnish and
Swedish
together?
There are Finnish people living there.
But,
they also speak Swedish.
So it's just strictly Swedish that they speak.
Schools, churches, everything is Swedish.
And then those islands are, they're near Sweden, aren't they? In the Baltic Sea?
Yeah, it's about the same distance between Finland and Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
It takes seven, it took 7 hours to get to Turku from our town with a boat. We went in the evening and we were in Turku in the morning. And it took about the same length of time to get to Stockholm. So we're just between.
The town where you were born then, did you live in town or was it more out in the country?
It was in the country, yes. Very beautiful place. We lived right by the woods, fir trees and pine trees and everything was in back of the house. It was just lovely.
Was it on the water then?
Yeah, we were close to the water, but it wasn't actually right by it. But we walked to the water and swam every day. And we took the cows to the pasture. That was by the water. And sometimes we went in the morning to take the cows to the pasture. And mother made us a picnic lunch, and we stayed there all day to bring the cows home to be milked in the evening.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was just lovely. Sometimes we took the cat along with us.
I think, we have some company. I'll turn this off. Okay. What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Julia.
Julia
Adina, A-D-A-I-N-A, Hinder was her maiden name.
Hinder,
H-I-N-D-E-R. Then of course when she married my father, it was Julia Adina Priestet.
What was your father's first name?
Gustav.
Gustav. Had that last name been changed at all? Do you know anything about the name?
Well, it wasn't changed at that time. His name was actually Priestet. It doesn't sound Finnish, but he came from a town called, I don't know what they say, call it in Finnish, but it's Björneborg he came from. And he spoke both languages, Swedish and Finnish. But now our cousins that we found in later years, they have changed their name to Laine from Priestet because they wanted it more Finnish-like, you know. So I don't think there are any more Priestets around.
Are they in Finland then, these cousins?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Raumo.
What work did your father do?
He was a baker.
A baker. Was he a baker in Finland too? Or?
Yes, yes. And there where my mother met him, in a bakery. Mother sold bread and he baked.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so they met working together.
Uh-huh. And then they got married.
Did you know anything about your grandparents, what work your grandparents did, either your father's parents or your mother's parents?
I don't know anything about my father. That's the saddest thing, because we were just separated mm-hmm. from them. Mm-hmm. And but I did know what my grandfather did. My grandfather was a ceramic maker. And the beautiful things he made.
Was it there on the islands?
Yes, uh-huh. Right there where we lived, where I was raised. Uh-huh. From
did
my
he
child.
Sell things there on the island, or did he send anything away, or?
I wouldn't know. They bought things. I'm sure they sent it over to different parts of the country, like. Further into Finland and things like that with a boat,
uh-huh.
that they bought things from him. But I really don't know how far it was sent.
Do you remember what kind of things he made? What kind of ceramic
or
dishes?
Or the bowls that they made filly in,
oh.
you know, those,
yeah,
that clabbered milk.
Yeah, like buttermilk.
Yes, and then a lot of flower pots. And vases and pretty things, candlesticks he made, very, very nice with a glaze on it that my mother had left, or my grandfather. But the saddest thing is that you don't, when you're young, you don't appreciate those things. You want new things. I thought our things were so old back home,
uh-huh.
and I said to mother, why don't you get something new sometimes,
uh-huh.
and now I would just love to have some
oh,
of those
to have
things
some
with
of
me, yes. Yeah.
Did he, was it at his home that he made the ceramics, or did he have a little shop?
He had it right in his home at one end of the house,
mm-hmm.
but that was taken down in later years when I lived there, so I really never saw his factory.
Do you remember what your house, oh, I was going to ask you first, did you have brothers and sisters?
Just two sisters.
Okay, well, are they younger than you? Or
they're
older.
Older. They're older.
What were their names?
My older sister was Mimi,
mm-hmm.
Wilhelmina,
uh-huh.
but they nicknamed her Mimi.
Yeah.
And my other sister that is a nurse, her name is Ingrid.
Ingrid.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she's still living, and she lives in Mariehamn, in Åland Islands,
uh-huh.
in a rest home.
Because
uh-huh. she got blind, and she had to go to the rest home.
I see.
Otherwise, she would have been fine in her apartment. She had a lovely apartment in Mariehamn.
Then, when you said when you were 3 years old, and your father came to America?
No, 3 months.
Three months old.
Yes.
So then your mother and your two sisters and you lived.
Yes.
Did you have the farm then, or did
yes.
you live?
No, we really lived in another place at the time.
Uh-huh.
But then later on, when my aunt found out that my mother was deserted,
mm-hmm.
she said that she should go home to the family home
mm-hmm.
and stay there because it was empty. And there
oh,
they had a, there we had a little farm. Maybe I don't can't actually say how big it was. Maybe 7 acres, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a cow, and mother raised cows, raised them from calves.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were ready to have their first calf, she sold them, and that was part of her living.
I see. So
yes.
she. Then
and she sold butter and milk, and
mm-hmm.
and she was the midwife in town.
Oh,
she
your
was
mother was a midwife.
Yes,
yeah.
She was very. I don't think she was really educated for it. She just picked it up. She was
uh-huh.
like a doctor.
Yeah.
But every child in our town, my mother delivered.
Is that right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then when they got older, she took them home and taught them their kindergarten. they called it ABC at that time. Of course, they had a little book, and it was ABC on it, because they didn't have a kindergarten in our school. They started the first grade. So mother used to have kids there all day long, and I got so tired of it. And the same children that she had delivered, it was sort of cute in a way.
Yes.
And then when they were through, they left their books there. And then she would always give them some little snack, and she said that the roaster had laid some goodies for them, because they were such good students.
Oh.
And maybe some prunes or raisins or half an apple or something like that. Not very elaborate.
But a
snack
for them.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, then, did your mother ever see your father again?
Never.
When he left?
Never.
Did you ever see him? He left
never.
For America.
And I wasn't even interested when I came to America to look for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had lived without him so many years, and I saw mother working so hard
mm-hmm.
and never complaining.
She
so I wasn't interested at all in
mm-hmm.
him. And we had the most beautiful relationship with our mother. And she was also a remarkable person. She never complained.
Mm-hmm.
So we had always security from her.
Mm-hmm. She must have been a very capable woman, that she was able to raise the three daughters alone and have a little farm going.
Yeah,
and
well,
a midwife and teaching kindergarten. And
did all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
She was never idle.
Mm-hmm.
If she sat down, she had knitted stockings and spun wool and linen and all kinds of things she was busy
mm-hmm.
with. Was marvelous, really, and it kept the house so nice.
How old was she when she died then?
89.
Oh my goodness, and so she lived a long life too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't die from overwork, that's for sure. And she really did work hard, and she was in pretty good health too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was beautiful.
Can you remember what that house looked like on the farm?
Oh yes, I can see it. I can see it in my when my eyes are closed, and I dream about it so many times that I am there and sleeping in the same bedroom I slept, and it was so cute. We had a little fireplace in the corner of our bedroom. They called it cockaloon.
Mm-hmm.
It was made out of tile, round,
uh-huh.
and then when it was fire in it, the tiles got warm and it kept the room warm all night.
Oh, this was in the bedroom. It was
in the bedroom, and every night about 6 o'clock, mother made the fire, and then we didn't put the lights on. It was dark. It got dark in the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
At 4 sometimes. But we sat there and just sat and looked at the fire in the dark.
Uh-huh.
And it was so beautiful. My girlfriend used to come over and they enjoyed it too.
Uh-huh.
And mother said, now we're going to have a little rest and we're going to sit and enjoy the fire.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes she gave us something to eat, which we enjoyed very much.
Do you remember any of the special food that you had at that time? What were some of your favorite things?
Oh, my mother was a beautiful cook, and she was a little different than some women around our neighborhood. She made, because she had been around people like when she worked in the bakery, they had such lovely food there, and she picked up everything and helped make it too, because she helped with the cooking too. When she worked in the bakery where she met my father. And we had the carrot pudding, and we had, they called it the liver loda, but it was made out of ground liver and rice and raisins, and then an egg custard on top of it and baked in the oven. It was very, very good. We had a layer of rice and layer of level, and then some raisins in with it, and little sugar. It doesn't sound good, but it was. To us, it was. And then, of course, she made meatballs, and she made, we had our pork roast, and we had the side pork that we corned ourselves, that we had all winter. And she always butchered a pig and a cat every fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then that had to be corned, because salted,
yeah,
because it wouldn't keep otherwise, and a brine put over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that we lived on the whole winter. And she made sausage and head cheese and rulle pulsa, they call it,
mm-hmm,
in Swedish. And all kinds of things. And everything was put in a brine,
mm-hmm,
so it would keep longer. We had a little house, not attached to the house, but it was by itself, so there we kept all our food.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a garden then too?
Yes, we did. We had not every vegetable that they have nowadays. We had beets and we had cabbage and carrots and rutabagas, and I think that was about all we had. And we kept that in the fruit cellar.
Okay, what was the fruit cellar like? Can you describe
that? Yeah, that was dug down in the dirt, and it was lined with bricks. And then it had a roof on it, but the walls didn't really come up very far,
mm-hmm,
because it was to be able to keep it cool in the summer and not freezing in the winter. They had it dug pretty deep down,
mm-hmm,
but it was a roof on it with shingles on it. And then you walk down about three or four steps to go down into it. And there we kept our potatoes and carrots and milk in the summer and butter in the summer, and it kept really nice and cool. It was very nice, not so convenient as to open the refrigerator door.
but
it worked beautifully, and
uh-huh,
we didn't know anything else.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't a hardship for us, but everybody had it that way.
Did your farm look like the other ones in the area? Do you think it was pretty typical for?
Well, our farm, our land was not that close to our house. It was a little separated, but we had quite a big lawn, and we had a woodshed, and we had the barn, and we had that house that we kept all our food. And of course, we didn't have inside plumbing, so we had that outside too. So it was really not very convenient in any way, but like I said before, we didn't really notice it because we didn't know anything else.
Did your mother raise any flowers?
Oh yes, but she made us do it,
uh-huh,
for us the children, because she said, I haven't got time. When we got older, I haven't time to do it, so you, if you want flowers, you plant them. And you fix up the flower beds and everything, so she can do the things that we couldn't do, and that we did.
What are some of the flowers that you had?
First of all, we had lilacs that, of course, grew every year in bushes, or trees rather, and a lot of birches we had, and we had calendulas,
mm-hmm,
and then we had we had so many different kinds. Oh, those cornflowers that are blue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think about the irises we had.
Mm-hmm.
And many other flowers, forget-me-nots. They were so cute, and violets we had. And Lily of the Valley, they grew practically wild.
Mm-hmm.
In certain places only, not all over, only in certain places they grew wild, and we used to go and pick them. There were flowers all over in the woods. wildflowers. I can't remember all their names, but they called them wheat sipa. And they're, oh, I can't think of the name now, but they have them over here in the woods also.
Did you pick berries too then? Were there berries in the woods?
There were very many wild berries, blueberries and lingon berries. And we also had a little bit of cranberries, but they grew in a different, they grew in moisture, almost in the moss they grew. So we didn't have too much of them, but and we had something they called smultron. That was like small wild strawberries. It was very, very nice. They were sweeter than the strawberries. And mother made jam out of them, and also out of the lingon berries. So we had it for the winter.
Do you remember any special medicines or home remedies that your mother would use, or people that you knew would use?
Well, I can't remember. Mother made a liniment out of turpentine and very heavy cream. And there was some other ingredients in it, but I can't remember what it was. Oh yes, ammonia. And the cream. And every time she used it on her shoulder or anything that hurts, like arthritis pain, she used it, and it was marvelous, just marvelous. And we had to shake the bottle every time we used it, a kind of the cream, because it separated. But it didn't curdle or anything. It was very creamy and nice. Mm-hmm. And that we used for wherever we got a pain. And then she also made the out of black currant. She made she made the juice and kept that all winter. And that was also good for colds and coughs and things like that. She heated it and gave it to us. And then it was a white flower that I cannot remember the name of it, but chamomile. Tea.
Right.
Yes. That's what she made tea out of for us to drink when we had the bad colds. We never knew what any real medicine was. We never had an aspirin in the house or anything like that.
Was there a doctor near?
Yeah, not, it wasn't too far, but I had never been to a doctor. Mm-hmm. All the time I was home, and I was 19 when I came over.
Oh, goodness.
I had to have an examination when I came over to America. Oh. The doctor said, you're very healthy, you can take off. You can take off any day.
Can you remember some of the special holidays and how you celebrated them?
Yes, Christmas was so beautiful at home. And we had Christmas for 20 days. And every neighbor had a Christmas party, and we all went to Christmas parties right after Christmas had started. And we had our Christmas trees that we cut down from the woods, and it snowed up to the waistline with snow, and they smelled so good. We shook the snow out of them, and we had a veranda in our house that went across the whole house. And she, mother used to keep it there and put paper under so it wouldn't ruin the floor. And then when it was dry enough, we took it in, and the whole house smelled from the pine, from the fir.
Did you decorate the tree?
Oh
then?
Yes,
what?
With little baskets of paper that they were woven in little strips of different kind of paper. Blue and red and green and all kinds, and with a handle on it. And then we put some little candy or raisins and prunes and all those kind of things in it. So at the day when it was to be taken down, then we could eat all those goodies.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Oh. And we made stars out of paper, and we didn't have any board. decorations, and they weren't woven. There were some strips of paper, colored paper, that we put together and made a garland out of that to put around the tree. They were very cute when we got done with it. And candles.
Oh, and candles.
Candles. We had candle holders that was put on the branches, and then they looked just like a little candle holder. And then we stuck the candles in there. And we never had an accident that it burned or anything, and we had them, the candles burning.
What about some of the other holidays? Can you remember?
Yes, the Midsummer was also one of the very highlight in our lives. That was really pretty. That was I don't know where that came from, but they cut down birches and decorated the outside of the house with birch trees. And some people even made a little house with just birches all around it. Then the entrance to go in, and in there was a little table, and you could go in there and have your coffee.
Oh my.
Yeah, I haven't seen that any place, but
no.
We had it back then.
Yeah.
And it was so pretty. Just at that time, the birch leaves were all out, and they were so pretty. And we had some places, there were no other tree except birches. Mm-hmm. So you never noticed that you had taken any birches, because they were so close to together.
Mm-hmm. Huh, I haven't heard of that custom before, so maybe it was just in that
Yeah,
area.
I think so. Uh-huh. I think so.
Did they have bonfires on the beach? I know that was something they did in different parts of Sweden.
We did that 1st of May, uh-huh. But never at the Midsummer. We didn't do it at that time. But 1st of May we had really, really big fires, and we used to go up on a mountain and build the fires, and then we could see all over town.
Oh.
And all the church steeples we could see from the mountain. The mountain was not far from our house where I lived, and we used to climb up there and make the fire.
Okay.
Right on top of the mountain.
And that was on the 1st of May?
1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
And then we used to sing Idag är det första maj, maj, maj. Idag är det första maj.
What does that mean?
Today is 1st of May.
Oh, that celebrates summer's coming.
Yeah, yes. It was really nice.
Were there any superstitions or, I guess the word superstitions, that you can remember that people in that area had?
Well, they used to talk about it, and it made me scared, because they said that right where we lived, in the house we lived, we had a woodshed, and they said that some lady that had, I don't know if she had lived in our house or what, but she was there chopping wood.
Oh, goodness.
And she had been dead for years and years and years.
Uh-huh.
And it took me a long time before I could go to the woodshed and get wood without being scared.
Uh-huh.
I
had to get over that.
I got rid of it though in later years, but when I was a child, I was scared. And then they said, we had some hills to go up, you know, on the road. And they always said that it was always somebody that was on the hill. And that scared me too, because I had to go by that when I worked for the minister to get home to visit my mother. Always had to go on that hill. And I thought, my goodness, I hope nobody's coming that I had to be scared of. But they did have a lot of superstition like that.
Did you go to school there then?
Yes.
How long? Where was your school? And could you tell me a little bit about it? How long you went to school and what it was like?
Yeah, I went to school about 6 years. And then from then, from there, that was all it. You couldn't go any longer. Mm-hmm. And then you went to, you went further. If you wanted to take, go to another school, then you could do it, like to high school. And but it was almost like high school, you know. But then if you wanted to take little higher up schools, mm-hmm. then you had to go from our school over there. But I didn't do it because I was more for the domestic.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted cooking and I wanted sewing and I wanted embroidery and I liked weaving and I liked all those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
So that was I quit and then I went to confirmation class.
Mm-hmm. Were you about 13 years old then, or how old were
14.
You? 14.
Yeah.
Did you, when you went to confirmation, was that right there near your home?
No,
did you have to go away?
I had to go away.
Mm-hmm.
It was too far to walk from our house to the parsonage where they had their confirmation class. So another girlfriend and I lived in a little house with a lady that lived alone.
Uh-huh.
And we had one of the bedrooms. And it was the darlingest house. It was right by the border. It was built out into some, it was like a point, and it was bordered on both sides of the house. It was just beautiful. I just loved it, and the lady was so nice. And we were supposed to have our own food, and we took food with us from home, and she helped us cook it and fix it for us.
And then
we went a long time too. It isn't like here. We started in the fall and we went the whole school year every day to confirmation class.
Mm-hmm.
It was so beautiful because we learned so many hymns to sing and it was a time that I will never forget because it was really nice. We had two pastors. One was for the catechism and the other one was for the Bible history.
Mm-hmm. Then after you finished the then in the spring, what did you do?
I stayed home for a while and then I had a very good friend that went to Stockholm and she wanted me to come to Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there a year.
Did you work there?
Yeah, I worked for our captain's wife that was a widow.
Mm-hmm.
And she had fixed up her house for a guest house. And she had about 7 or 8 people living there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there I worked for about a year.
Were they people that were traveling or people
Yeah,
that
people that came to Stockholm and they knew about it. They called it a private hotel,
mm-hmm.
but it really wasn't a hotel. They served coffee and some coffee bread and cakes for breakfast, but we didn't serve anything else.
Must have
and
been interesting for you to come from a small place and then come
yeah,
to work in a hotel and see all these different people.
Yeah, it was.
Different
it was very, very nice. Some of the ladies that came, one lady that came from another part of this, of Sweden, she wanted me to take me with her and take me to her place.
Mm-hmm.
I worked hard. I there and she didn't give me enough food either.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and I was very homesick,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't want to let them know that I was homesick at home, so I stuck it out a year.
Uh-huh. Did you go back home then?
Yeah, I went back home,
mm-hmm.
and then I was home for a while and helped mother with things at home, and then I started working for the minister.
In that little town?
Yeah, not in the same town. It was a different town, but not very far from where we lived.
Did you live there at the parsonage?
Oh yes. I really didn't, I don't really know what I did, but I did a lot of little things. I knitted the minister's wife's stockings, and I took care of the plants. He had a lovely, lovely room just full of plants,
mm-hmm.
beautiful plants. and I took care of them, and I got the wood home in the house from their wood shed.
Mm-hmm.
We had to have fire in all the fireplaces every morning, and that was my job. Every morning I made fire in all the room. It was nice when I got them more going.
Uh-huh.
But that was work.
Yeah, and they were pretty good to you there.
The minister's wife was not very nice.
Oh.
But she was good to me.
Yeah.
And but I have never met as beautiful a man as the minister was.
Uh-huh.
He was something that I really would love to be like, because he was so marvelous. But she was not. She wasn't very good, very nice. She was a brother of a very famous, she was a sister of a very famous architect in Finland. He lived in Helsinki. His name was Lars Sonck.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very well known there.
Mm-hmm. How long did you stay with them then?
I stayed there till I went to America.
Why did you decide to come to America?
I didn't really decide. It just came on me all of a sudden, and because I thought I would never leave home and go to America. And I had a boyfriend too that had a big farm, and we were supposed to get married, and well, we really didn't at the time, but we were sort of talking about it now and then. And then when my friend Edith came and said she was going to America, I thought I would go too. She said, come with me, because I would be so lonesome without you, because we were close neighbors. And she wasn't really from my town, but she worked in the town, in the store across the street from my home. And we became very good friends. So my poor little mother, didn't want me to go on, because she thought it was too much and too far away, and I didn't speak English or anything. And first top, I didn't think it was, but she thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would too now if it was my daughter.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and the minister, he didn't want me to go either. He said, other people live here, so you can also live here. And he said, that big place, New York, you wouldn't like. And well, I didn't pay much attention to it, because I went.
Do you remember, what do you remember about the trip? What did you bring with you when you came?
I didn't really bring an awful lot. I bought a few clothes, and I brought some bread with me from home. That got old by the time it got here.
Mm-hmm.
I brought that to my friends that met me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not so very good when I came, because it took 11 days on the ship alone to go from Gothenburg to New York.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
1922.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the trip? Did you enjoy the ship?
I was very seasick.
Mm-hmm.
At first. I was very seasick, but then I got better later on, and I could eat a little bit. But at first I couldn't even look at food, because I was so sick.
Mm-hmm. Did you go through Ellis Island when you
Yeah,
came?
We had to go. We wouldn't have, but we went on a ship by the name of Stockholm,
mm-hmm.
a Swedish-American line. And they came there after 5, and then they didn't let anybody off at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go to Ellis Island. That was about the saddest thing I have ever seen or had any done to me, because that was awful. That was a terrible place. We were 6 in a little room, and we didn't have mattresses or anything. We were sleeping on chicken, like they have for chickens.
Mm-hmm. Chicken wire?
Yeah, yeah. And we did get a pillow and a blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, is this America?
Uh-huh.
And when I thought it was so, thought it would be so beautiful in America and everybody would be just have it just so nice. And those people, poor people that were waiting for somebody to come and meet them and they didn't come. So every time that somebody was calling names, they came running and thinking that maybe it was them
mm-hmm.
that they were calling for, but they didn't. And that was people from all from Yugoslavia and different town countries like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Swedish and Finnish people, they could, there wasn't any of them that was stranded there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had somebody to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to, they didn't let you leave if you didn't have a sponsor.
What happened to those people if no one came? Did they have to go
back? I don't know. I often wonder because they had children with them and everything. I think they had to go back to send them back.
Oh dear.
But that was really sad and the food was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And I, well, it was an experience that maybe was part of my life,
mm-hmm.
that I could see how it was.
Did, then, what did you do when, after you got through with Ellis Island? You stayed in New York, or?
I stayed in New York, and...
Did you know someone there, or did your friend know someone?
Yeah, I knew a girl that... I was only 11 when she left Åland Islands. So I didn't really, I remembered her real well and I knew she had wouldn't have changed that much. But she couldn't sponsor me because their family was in their summer home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a beautiful, beautiful place. They had all their rooms for their help and the beautiful living rooms and dining rooms and what have you in that place. And I came to that house because that's where my friends were. And then it was time for me to look for a job. And Edith, the girl that I came with my friend, we went to an employment agency, her and I, and looked for a job. And there this lady came and she wanted two girls.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just fitted us perfectly. And so we went there and we have had to have an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you speak any English then?
Not a word, not a word. But this lady was from Swedish descent. Her mother and father was from Stockholm, Sweden. And she spoke fluent Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
So we really didn't learn any English there because she spoke Swedish to us all the time. And she, furthermore, she didn't want us to learn English because then she thought we might leave. Because she was very, very hard to work for. Many people, well, not anybody would have stayed there because she didn't feed us. We were so hungry, we were so hungry. And she used to get us herring all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I loved herring, but I really didn't like it three times a day.
Oh, no.
And we worked early in the morning and we could choose what we wanted to do. The cooking or the waiting on the table and the cleaning. Chambermaid, waitress, and I did not want to do the waiting on the table, and Edith was not good in cooking, but I was, and I don't say I was good, but I knew a little bit more about it, I could master it better than Edith could, so we could choose what we wanted, but the one that did the cooking had to do the washing, and that was really pretty hard, you know, because every Monday I had to get up at 4 in the morning to do the washing because I could not go downstairs where they had the laundry because she thought I would waste too much time with the other girls that did the washing there you know, that was for other families. Uh-huh. It was a big, big apartment house. We lived on the 8th floor. So it was a big laundry and many tubs, and we boiled the clothes at that time. But she wanted me to do it in the kitchen. So I had to get up at 4 in the morning, or night rather, and to start my washing, so it would be all done by the time it was breakfast time. He didn't want any commotion. And I hung it up on the roof. Mm-hmm. We had lines on the roof, and I used to take the baskets in an elevator and go up on the roof and hang them up.
How long did you and Edith stay there?
Till we got so hungry that we had to leave. No, I was luckier than Edith, because I had more friends. I made friends right away. And the first thing they did when I came to visit, they said, put out food for Esther, he's mm-hmm. hungry. And all my friends fed me. And I used to go to Ethel Barrymore's house. One of my friends, the one that met me, she worked for Ethel Barrymore.
For Ethel Barrymore, oh.
Yeah, she worked for Ethel Barrymore. And I used to go there and see them. It was just 7 blocks from my place to where they lived. And I used to go and visit Esther, and they had two girls, or ladies rather, working from Ireland, and they were so lovely. Mm-hmm. Esther had told that
well, then you finally, you left that place.
Yeah,
what finally happened?
I think we worked there 10 months or 9 months. I can't remember really how long we worked there. But that one evening, right after dinner, or while I was cooking dinner, a friend of ours came over. It was a lady that came on the same boat over when we came, only she had been in America before, and she looked after us sort of to see how everything was going. So Lena came over to visit us, and Mrs. von Schlegel was the lady we worked for, and she heard that we had company. So but she didn't say anything at the time, but after dinner, she came into the kitchen, and she was really angry, and she said, don't you dare have company during dinner time, and because she said they can come after 8 if they want to come, but not before, and they're just confusing you when you have to cook the dinner, she said to me. And so she said, you can't have company that time. So I said, well, Mrs. von Schlegel, I said, you got your dinner in time. They ate at 7. I said, you got your dinner in time. I did not take any time to visit with her. I did what I was supposed to do. So she said, that's not the idea. The idea is that you're not having company when you're working. So Edith got angry. She said, we're not in jail, and we can have company when we want to, and we're leaving. And both Esther and I are leaving. Well, I was shocked because she didn't discuss it with me at all. Said, we're both leaving. And so she said, is that right, Esther? She said to me. So I said, yes, if Edith said so, naturally, it's supposed to be so. And so she went into her room, and we had, in the kitchen, we had bells for each room of the house. It was an apartment. And the bell rang, and it was from her bedroom. She was lying down on a couch that she had in the bedroom and was crying. And she said, Esther, she said, is it really true that you were leaving? So I said, yes. I said, I think we should, because we have to learn to speak English, and I said, we don't learn over here, and he would never let us learn, and there wasn't time to go to night schools. So, but anyhow, she said, well, would you stay at least 2 weeks so we can get somebody else to replace you? And I said, yes, I could do that. And then she said, would you please massage my head, because I have such a terrible headache. And I sat there with her head in my lap, and I massaged her head. Then she cried, and I cried. And Edith got mad. She said, you didn't have to do that, because you could just have left her alone, and you didn't have to go and massage her head and things, all the bad things she had done to us. But I said, oh, Edith, I said, we stood it for so long, so a little while longer wouldn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, she asked me to stay 2 weeks, but she didn't ask Edith right away.
Uh-huh.
But she, and then she didn't like, Edith didn't like that. So I said, well, another week that isn't bad. I said, I surely can take that. So, but then she asked Edith to stay the 2 weeks, so we both stayed, and we left on a Sunday, and I had an appointment to go to Bronx Park with a group of young people that Sunday, and they were coming to get me, and I stayed with my my darling friends that met me.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed with them till I wanted to know what to do. So, but anyhow, Mrs. von Schlegel came and asked me, could you stay and cook supper for us, because I'm having a few friends come in. And I said yes. And then the friends that came to take me with them to Bronx Park, I said, I can't go because I have to cook dinner for them. She said, I always thought it was something wrong with you, one of the girls said, and now I really find out that. Haven't you had enough?
Uh-huh.
They said. So, but I stayed at for the evening, and she was really, it was sad because she cried when I left, and Mr. von Schlegel came in, and he said, if you ever need anything, if you want something, don't hesitate, come over. He was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know how she treated us. We were even, got sick from malnutrition while we worked there. And the doctor came in, they had a doctor in the apartment and in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over to see us, and I learned to the language, even though I couldn't speak, but I could understand.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you have to feed the girls better food. You have to they have to have eggs, and they have to have cooked cereals and good milk and all that, because they are undernourished, he said. And maybe I didn't know exactly that word, but I knew most of it. And so from that wasn't very long though, she didn't do what he said. But we had to have medicines, and we had terrible pain in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Our back, my back hurt so bad that I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what we had. And that's
mm-hmm.
what our problem was.
Mm-hmm.
We were undernourished. So I shouldn't have cried when I left. But I didn't know what the future would bring.
Mm-hmm.
But then shortly after, they needed a girl in Ethel Barrymore's place. They were moving to the summer home in Maroneck,
mm-hmm.
New York. And one lady had to stay in New York with Ethel Barrymore to take care of her and the chauffeur and another lady. And they wanted me to go with them to wait on the table and look after sometimes the children. Ethel Barrymore had 3 children, Ethel and Jackie and Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie was only about 10 years old, and we were good pals, him and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a real nice place in Maroneck. help had their own little cottage by themselves. And it was very, very nice.
How long did you work for the Barrymore?
Yeah, just in the summer, during the summertime. Because they want, then we were moving back to New York, and they wanted me to do the laundry, and I didn't want to do the laundry because I had done cooking all the time, and I wanted to do that.
Uh-huh.
Because it was more money in that too than anything else. But it wouldn't have been hard if I had done the laundry because I didn't have to do anything else
mm-hmm.
except the laundry. What that would have been, the ironing and everything with three children and
mm-hmm.
Ethel Barrymore had silk sheets on the beds, and it would not have been so easy
yeah.
to do. So I didn't like that idea. So I got a job in a place in Connecticut, but that was just a summer job. And they traveled during the winter. So I just was there a short time and did the cooking, and it was in Scranton,
mm-hmm.
Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And their name was Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their grandchild was born, he was for some kind of government job that he was applying for, and that was the grandson of the people that I worked for.
Right.
And well, anyhow, that was the best job I ever had, because we were two girls, my girlfriend and I, another girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
she's the one that wanted me to come
mm-hmm.
over there, and I've never had it so good, because I only had to cook for two people,
mm-hmm.
and for us two, of course, Annie and I.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lovely job, and we lived right by the border,
mm-hmm.
and the lady was so kind. She always said, "Get ready, girls, at 2 o'clock, so you can go and swim."
Mm-hmm.
And they had their dinner in the middle of the day, and lights up at night, so I didn't have much to do. Coming in at 5, I would go upstairs and get dressed, and then go down and fix their supper, and then we had all evening to swim again. And
oh goodness!
Yeah, we really that was a really nice. But there wasn't any of our friends that were close by, but we met other people that worked at different houses around there, and we had really very, very good time there.
Mm-hmm. Did you meet your husband in New York then?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I met my husband. Well, after that, I came back from Connecticut, because they were giving up their home in the fall, and then they traveled, and then I was supposed to come back again the following year.
Uh-huh.
And when I came back to New York, I had a friend in Boston, and she said, she was a friend also from home,
mm-hmm.
from Orland Islands, and she said, it's so much nicer in Boston than it is in New York, because it's more like home. So I went there and took the train over there. I hadn't fully learned English yet, but I went there, and she came, worked for a doctor, and she came and met me, and took me right to the doctor's place, because she had to work in the evening,
mm-hmm.
and then I went with her home, and she took me to her aunt's place,
mm-hmm.
where I stayed till I got a job. And so I took the subway or elevator, whatever I took, to an employment agency to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one too. A lady came, and she said it was a Swedish employment agency, so she interpreted. And she said, it's a girl here that maybe you would be interested in, she said to Mrs. Perkins. And so she interviewed other girls and me too. She wanted a cook. And she looked at me, and of course I was young, and she didn't think I had experience enough, because they had four children, and they had a chauffeur, and they had a chambermaid, and they had a nurse, and there were so many people I had to cook for. And she said that the children eat a lot of cookies, and you have to make cookies, and you have to bake all the bread, because I never buy any bread. And I hadn't baked any bread since I left Finland. And she didn't really want me, because she didn't think I could master it. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think I can do it. And so she said, well, I give you a trial for 2 weeks. If you don't like it, in 2 weeks, you tell me, and if I think you can't make it, I'll tell you. So that's how I came there, and I was very, very, really shocked when she told me to take a taxi, and they paid for it in Mattapan Square to go to the house. They lived in Milton, Massachusetts. And it was the biggest house I ever saw, the beautiful, beautiful home with circular driveway. The taxi drove off, and I went in the front entrance, and the lady opened the door for me, Mrs. Perkins, and she said, you came in through the front door. And I didn't realize that you shouldn't go through the front door, I should have gone through the kitchen entrance or whatever. But I said, I'm sorry, I could say that. And I understood everything she said. And I was really scared, because the home was so beautiful. They had fireplaces in every room. And the end irons in front of the fireplaces were just outstanding. And the big, tall windows, and every room was just gorgeous. 3 floors they had. Mm. And it was really something else. But she said, I'll show you around, she said. And you know, I really was scared cooking supper there that night, because the kids ate separately, mm-hmm. and with the nurse. And then the people ate later, Mrs. Perkins and Mr. Perkins. And we had fish that night, and I was supposed to make it differently, and I didn't know what she said, and I couldn't read cookbooks. So I made it my way. I mm-hmm. thought I would just fix it the way my mother did. Uh-huh. And I know it was steamed, and I made a gravy for it from the broth that the fish was cooked in. And she came, when after they ate, she came into the kitchen, and she said, you didn't really fix the fish the way I wanted it, she said. What, she said, it was the nicest meal I have ever had, she said. And Mr. Perkins just loved the way you fixed the fish.
Well,
that made me sort of happy. Uh-huh. But many times I substituted what she wanted for something that I thought that would qualify. Uh-huh. I cooked it up my own way. And as I said, mother made me do things at home, and I knew how to cook at mm-hmm. home. And the first evening I was there, I had to make bread. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how that would turn out, but it turned out really beautifully. And I had to get up early in the morning and have warm rolls for them for breakfast. And it was pretty much for a 20-year-old girl,
oh, yes.
you know. But I did that. And the 2 weeks was up, and I decided I didn't want to stay. It was just too much.
Uh-huh.
And so she came down to the kitchen, and she said, "Esther," she said, "aren't you going to bring your trunk over?" And I said, "Mrs. Perkins," I said, "I'm sorry, but I think I want to leave." Mm-hmm. And she said, "If I give you more money, would you stay?" Because she said, "You were doing beautifully." And the children and I got such good friends. Arthur, the oldest boy, always had lessons with me mm-hmm. later on, mm-hmm. English. And every time after I got through with my dinner, he came down and he had had a lovely dining room. And we used to sit at the table in the dining room. And he said, "Esther, it's time for your lesson." Uh-huh. And he came with his books and all the things. And I had to do certain things. So he would know how I had spelled the words and the writing and all that.
Oh.
And it was really lovely. He was 13, so he was pretty far up in school already, so he could teach me.
How long did you stay with them then?
3 years.
Did you meet your husband while you were
No, I didn't. Then I promised Mother that I would come home as soon as I paid my fare coming over here and saved enough money to go back home and visit. And that I did mm-hmm. because I got to make pretty good money there in Boston. I got $90 a month, which was very good at that time. And so I saved every penny I possibly could so I would be able to go home. Mm-hmm. And then I went home to visit my mother and sisters, and that was really a lovely, lovely time. I came home for Christmas, and it was so beautiful, and there was so much snow, and we went to church with a horse and a sleigh, and it was just I forgot how beautiful it was mm-hmm. in the winter time. So that's, then I was supposed to go back again to the same place, but I stayed in New York. Everybody wanted me to stay there. Mm-hmm. And there I met my husband mm-hmm. that time. I went to visit some friends that I had, mm-hmm. and he had a room with them. And he opened the door for me. Mm-hmm. And he said, when he opened the door, he said, "Oh my," he said, "Esther Friestedt is coming." So I said, "How did you know that my name?" So he said, "Well, I have seen pictures of you," uh-huh. because I had sent some pictures to Elin, my friend. Uh-huh. And so he had looked at them, so he knew it was me. So we started going together. Not actually then, mm-hmm. but every now and then he would take me home. And uh-huh. I went to, I started working, I got a job from the paper. Mm-hmm. And that was in Brooklyn, on Ocean Parkway, they called it. And I went there to interview the lady, and she wanted me right away. I had a very good reference, mm-hmm. very good references. And she wanted me, and I don't know why in the world I took it, because I had to do all the work, the cooking and the cleaning and the washing, and besides look after the child. They had just one child at the time. A little bit too much work for $75 a month when I had made in Boston so much more. Uh-huh. And I don't know why I took it. But it must have been for some reason, because I worked there. From that time on, I worked there for years and years. Mm-hmm. My daughter was born, that little girl uh-huh. was born there. Mona was born there. And because we came back, I think I came off now a little bit. We went home. When I was pregnant with my first child, mm-hmm. because then I couldn't work there any longer. And then when my child died, back home. We came back, and it was still depression. And meanwhile, they had built a house while we were back home in Norland Islands. They had built a home and in Great Neck, Long Island. They had a beautiful home there. And they needed a couple, they needed a cook and a chauffeur and gardener and butler. And she wanted both of us to come and work. Of course, my husband had never done any work like that, so I had to train him.
Mm-hmm.
It was very hard because he wouldn't do what I told him to do at time. He said, if you don't like it, do it yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I had much to do, and I said, if that's not the idea, I said, you got to do it right, and
uh-huh.
that's it. And to wait on the table, he would always say, right or left, when he went
uh-huh.
in with food and things.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was a very good teacher because they said he was one of the best ones they have ever had.
Mm-hmm. Well, then after your daughter was born there in New York, then when did you move out here to the West?
1943.
Okay, so you stayed there and before, you were there for some time.
Yeah, we've had that our own place for a little.
Mm-hmm.
While, because I think my husband got sort of sick of it. He used to leave now and then and not come back.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wanted to leave the last time, I said, if you're leaving now, Victor, I said, I'm going to go with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because my daughter was 6 years at the
mm-hmm.
time. And I said, I'm a little bit tired of it too. So we got an apartment then.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had to work there anyhow,
mm-hmm.
because when she didn't, she had a cook maybe 2 weeks or so, and then she had to have a new one, and I had to come there and clean up the kitchen, so every cook that came would know how it was supposed to be kept.
Oh, I see.
So yet I didn't really have much rest,
mm-hmm.
and my husband we moved to Brooklyn. And my husband got a job in Washington, D.C. He worked for the Pentagon building.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came recruiting from Vancouver, Washington, and Portland for work people to work in the shipyards.
Oh.
And they came to Washington, D.C. And Victor read about it. And he went and interviewed this gentleman that was interviewing people to come, because Victor did not have to go in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it would be nice if he did something for the war when he didn't have to go in the service. So in Easter in 1943, I expected him home from Washington, D.C. And instead of that, I got a registered letter. We had just come home from church, my daughter and I, and I got the registered letter, and he wanted me to sign the paper so he could sell the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know at all. He had not discussed it with me
mm-hmm.
that he was going to go any place. And he said in the letter that he had made up his mind to go to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that it was, they said, or Esther said, it isn't even in America.
Well, they were thinking of Vancouver, Canada.
Yes, uh-huh. yes. So, well, yeah, I found out where it was anyhow, but I was a little discouraged because he did have a wonderful job
mm-hmm.
and well paid. And I was supposed to come right after school was over because he left 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go, I stayed in New York
mm-hmm.
and I got a part-time job for a dentist and I worked for them so I would be home when Mona came home
mm-hmm.
from school. And then, but then in September he sent the tickets to an agency and for both of us, and they called me from the agency and they said that you have 2 tickets to leave for Vancouver, Washington, the 20th of September. So that what we did.
So it was time to go.
It was time to go. There was no other way. So we went. And it was sort of a dismal day, raining. I wasn't used to that much rain, but it was terrible. And at that time, they had built homes for the shipyard workers.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked like row houses, like barracks.
Mm-hmm.
And we, but luckily, we got an apartment that had, was on the outside, the end apartment. So it was not very, it wasn't very good because we had a coal stove. We had to cook on a coal stove, and we had to heat the apartment with a coal stove.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had no rugs on the floor, and it was supposed to be furnished, but it was four chairs and a table in the living room.
Mm-hmm. Now there were lots of people here then at that time working in the shipyards, very many.
But at that time, that particular place where we lived, they called it Burton Homes, where we lived, it wasn't that many people there yet then.
Mm-hmm.
But it got filled up before mm-hmm. we moved from there. We got another place to live in that was better. And well, I liked it there just the same because I fixed it up. I took things with me from New York, the things that I could take with me. And I put pictures up on the wall and I hung up curtains and we painted the bathroom and we did a lot of things and we got hold of our two electric burners.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, in the summertime, we did a lot of cooking on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we came in September and in October I started working. They started a nursery for the shipyard worker children. And I started working there, I think the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there to interview and I did the cooking. I did the evening meal, started at 12.
They paid the workers there pretty well, didn't they, at the shipyards?
Oh, yeah, at the shipyards.
Yeah, the workers.
Well, pretty well at the time. And of course, everything was on coupons then.
Oh, ration cards.
Yeah,
gas and meat and
everything. And but we didn't have a car, so it was so convenient. The bus or they had great big buses that looked almost like trains.
Mm-hmm.
That day, because it was so many people that took the bus instead of driving.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't buy cars.
Yeah.
And and my husband should have driven here instead of selling the car because we had a nice car.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. So, but he got the bus right at the corner of our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't hard.
Did you join then you just stayed here in Vancouver. Did you join any Scandinavian groups? Did you belong to any?
No, I didn't seem to ever have time because
mm-hmm.
I worked all the time.
Mm-hmm. You When did you retire? When did you quit working now?
Oh, well, that's a long story. I don't know. I worked, I used to cater. I would cook meals for people and then they had company and went out and cooked and also cleaned houses for
mm-hmm.
people and did the cooking too and did all kinds of things. But the highlights of my life maybe was when I worked in this nursery for the children, which was very, very nice. I have a book there on the desk that you can look in after.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, I worked, it was only from October to December, the same year, 43. And then they promoted me, they wanted me to be the head cook there. So I was promoted the same day. They came and wanted me to take pictures of me from the shipyard. They wanted me to christen a ship.
Oh, really?
So I christened a ship Roosevelt, Eleanor Roosevelt, christened the first one, and I christened the second one, the same aircraft carriers.
Uh-huh.
And why I got the privilege of doing it was that the shipyard workers built two more ships than the quota, and the Navy was so happy that they got two more ships, so they got let the shipyard workers christen the ships.
Mm-hmm.
One on graveyard ship and one on day ship.
My husband
was on. And my husband was, his name was drawn.
Uh-huh.
And he came and said to me one time, he said, Esther, he said, I'm scared, I think I have to christen the ship. And of course, we had never heard anything, only in pictures I have seen ships being christened. So I said, don't worry about it, that's all right. And then one of my friends told me the following day, he said, Victor is not the one that's going to christen the ship, you are. and then it was a different story, I got really scared.
Uh-huh.
But then I really was nervous. And they came and the same day when they promoted me, they came and took my pictures in the nursery to let everybody know who was the sponsor of the ship,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, and I did that the 4th of December.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the ship?
Hoggett Bay.
Hoggett Bay?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I got a real big sterling silver platter with the name engraved in it.
Yeah. Okay, there's one other question I wanted to ask you, and that was, how would you describe the Swedish people? Swedish or Finnish people? I'd have to say Swedish or Finnish since you are from Åland.
Well, I really can't tell you because I have met every nationality, I think, that it is in this continent.
Mm-hmm.
I have met Swedes, I have met Norwegians and Danes and Åland Islanders and really the Finnish people that don't speak the Swedish language. And I have met people from Scotland and Ireland and Belgium and Holland, and I have found in every nationality, there are a resemblance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can really, maybe some are really different in their thinking and their thoughts and maybe their temperament.
Mm-hmm.
Like they say, Finnish people is a little temperamental
mm-hmm.
and can get really angry. You know.
Yeah,
and
that's what I
yeah, yeah, but I don't think I have any traits of it because I don't think I would have stayed in that place and being hungry for 9 months if I had had if I had had any anger
uh-huh.
inside of me. But I really can't say that the Finnish people are supposed to be known for very clean people. And I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I really can't tell you anything else.
Okay. Do you have any special sayings or prayers, something that you could say in your language, to say in Swedish? Do you have a favorite saying that you have?
Yes, I do. Which I say every night that my mother had taught me to pray, and that is good some harvest. Barn and chat, say till meek some leet and air, what ya meek, I världen vänder, storm in lycka i Guds händer, lyckan kommer, lyckan går, den Gud älskar, lyckan får. I say that every night.
Is that like the Lord's Prayer?
No.
No?
Is that? No, Lord's Prayer is
yeah.
different.
Uh-huh.
Father war so merry himmelen.
Uh-huh.
That's how. That is another
uh-huh.
little prayer
mm-hmm.
that we always said that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't have any more questions. Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Oh, yes. I do want to tell you something that is very, very sad. We built our own home mm-hmm. while my husband was living. We bought a lot and we built our home, beautiful home.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show the pictures to you later. And my husband and I, we lived there, he didn't live there as long as I did. I lived there 11 years, but
mm-hmm.
he died before that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sad because my husband died of penicillin reaction. From two shots of penicillin, he died from it.
Oh.
He was so allergic to it,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor didn't give him medicine to counteract it right
mm-hmm.
away. So he was sick from May to August,
mm-hmm.
and every part of his body was affected by the penicillin. It's like a fungus.
Mm-hmm.
It grows all over the
mm-hmm.
inside of your body.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, and of course then I was all alone. My daughter was married.
Mm-hmm.
No, she wasn't married. No, I forgot. She was home,
uh-huh.
and she stayed with me. And but then she got married later on. And I was there for about 2 years by myself. And then they came and said that the highway was taking the house and it had to be torn down.
Mm.
That was very, very sad because it was a lovely place. It was close to the river,
uh-huh.
overlooking the airport.
Uh-huh.
So we saw all the lights from the airport every night.
Mm-hmm.
It was green and red
uh-huh.
and white and blue and
mm-hmm.
it was just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really one of my saddest that happened to me
mm-hmm.
in America.
Mm-hmm.
Losing my husband and the home.
And to lose the home.
The
too.
Home too.
Oh,
and we
goodness.
Worked so hard
uh-huh.
at it that we planned everything. We had a daylight basement, a beautiful
mm-hmm.
basement with a bedroom and a fireplace, a used brick fireplace
mm-hmm.
downstairs with a lovely, lovely room overlooking the garden, and we had beautiful, beautiful garden.
Oh, goodness, that
all
must have been.
Yes,
have been
it was so
well.
Sad.
Uh-huh.
So my daughter was married then, and she had just had her first child,
mm-hmm.
1968, and I moved there.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Illinois, to DeKalb, Illinois, because I didn't want to be around to see them tear down the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed there 2 years and then I came back and
mm-hmm.
then I moved into this apartment
mm-hmm.
and I have lived here going on 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the highlights of my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. You've had a very interesting life.
You're very, very welcome. There is many, many other things I could talk about, but you would have to stay here a week.
I wonder if we could do another interview sometime. Maybe I could come again.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well.